Omaha Public Radio presents another luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. Today's guest speaker making his second appearance at the Omaha Press Club will be Trev Alberts, the athletic director of the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Mr. Alberts, substituting for UNO hockey coach Dean Blaze, who was unable to appear due to a conflict, will speak on the topic UNO Hockey and the World Junior Championships. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, January 26, 2012, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of the Omaha Press Club, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. Here now to introduce the speaker is Bridget Brooks, a member of the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee.
Our guest today is University of Nebraska Omaha Athletic Director Trev Alberts. Trev joined UNO in April 2009. Since then, he's been a busy guy. In 2011 alone, he won the approval from the Board of Regents for a plan to reclassify UNO athletics from Division II to Division I while earning an invitation to join the Summit League. In doing so, he made the difficult decision to eliminate football and wrestling. Also last year, Trev oversaw the rebranding of UNO athletics with new logos. The rebranding effort was embraced by the entire university community, and the new O logo is being used throughout colleges and departments on campus, and I see at least one example of it in attendance here today. In July, he secured a spot for the UNO hockey team in the new National Collegiate Hockey Conference, a move designed to further strengthen Maverick hockey as UNO's flagship sport. In the 2013-14 season, UNO hockey will be joining current WCHA foes Colorado College, Denver, Minnesota Duluth, North Dakota, and St. Cloud, and reuniting with former CCHA foes Miami and Western Michigan. Of course, Trev first became known to Nebraskans as a Husker football player. One of the most decorated defensive players in University of Nebraska history, he was the Huskers' first Butkus Award winner in 1993, capping one of the finest seasons in history by an NU defensive player. Trev will speak for a half hour or so, and then take questions from you, our audience. There is paper and pencil at your table, so write down your questions, and they will be brought to me to ask from the podium. Welcome, Trev.
Well, thank you, Bridget. I'd like to first apologize. I know that you all would much prefer listening to Dean Blaze speak, and so I'm a bad alternative and Plan B for our hockey coach. But Dean is very busy. This is an off week for us, so recruiting it's a great chance for our coaches to get out and spend quite a bit of time recruiting so our coaches are busy with that. I was going to make a lot of really substantial announcements here today until I saw Rob White and Henry Cordes here. So we'll keep this sort of muted in that regard. But I do appreciate you having me. I remember the last time I was here. I don't know how long I had been on the job, but it wasn't very long. And so sort of what I thought I would do today is kind of give you an update on what our last conversation was and then also kind of explain to you some of our visioning for how we're going to progress now moving forward. And I think the last time we were here, we sort of talked about three things. And first of all, we talked about excellence. And it didn't take me very long to get to Omaha to recognize that we really were held accountable to and had one choice, and that was to aim for excellence. We have our letterhead now, of course, with our new O. And on the top, in the middle, it's excellence. We have passion and teamwork. Those are three of our core values. Excellence is what we hope to attain each and every day. And again, as I mentioned earlier, we recognized very early on that we didn't get to define what excellence at UNO looked like. The Omaha community defines what excellence looks like. And so we're held accountable to that excellence. So what we're looking for is we're looking for passionate coaches, students, and administrators who are willing to work within the framework of teamwork to achieve excellence. We simply can't tolerate anybody on our staff that isn't interested in looking at the greater sum rather than any individual agendas. And so really what I want to talk about today is, and we talk about a lot about this as a staff, fiscal excellence equals programmatic excellence equals facility excellence. Many of you, of course, 3 years ago when we started, were well aware of UNO's difficulty in terms of fiscal excellence. Quite frankly, it was a topic that I wasn't really all that aware of. I had read a lot of the articles that Henry had written in the Omaha World Herald and was aware of some past difficulties in terms of, the fiscal picture within our athletic department. And so as we set out to create a vision for our department, how we could achieve the level of excellence that Omaha demands and expects of its public institution, both on the academic side of the house as well as athletically, we recognized that our first priority had to be to stabilize ourselves financially. And what we tried to communicate both internally as well as on our campus is to have everybody understand that we were going to have a very difficult time attaining fiscal excellence if we didn't have programmatic excellence competing in facilities of excellence. Unanimity of those three concepts, we felt, was sort of mandatory if we were going to achieve the kind of excellence that we'd hoped to attain. And so we spent a lot of time, many of you are well aware, and Bridget mentioned it, I think first 2.5 years, quite frankly, totally focused on finding a way to stabilize ourselves financially, to create a vision long term that would allow us to create the fiscal excellence that, we sort of were looking for. I think what we're doing now, that's ongoing. Fiscal excellence will always be something that's at the forefront of what we're trying to do. Can give you a little bit of an update. In our move to Division I, we really focused on ways that we could find additional revenue. I think one of our big pieces was to try to cap and stabilize the subsidized support to our athletic department and then be challenged with finding additional revenue sources beyond the traditional university support, tuition remissions, and student fees. As you can imagine, in very difficult budget scenarios on the academic side of the house, when academic programs are decreased and lessened and cuts are made, meanwhile, the athletic department was increasingly needing higher and more sustainable subsidies to sustain the department. And so our move to Division I, in essence, was a real effort at meeting the sort of marketplace excellence in terms of Omaha's expectations about Division I, but also finding additional revenues. And primarily those were for game guarantees in men's basketball. Those have come to fruition. This year, I think it's about $155,000 of game guarantees that we were able to secure, playing teams like Michigan State, Northern Illinois, and others. 2012-13, we have signed contracts for $260,000 worth of game guarantees. We'll be playing at Iowa State. We'll be playing at Wisconsin, playing in another big tournament. So that's $260,000 of revenue we weren't able to get at Division II because you have to be a Division I member and a counter for those schools to pay that sort of money. Just to give you a little perspective of what that represents, $260,000 for our department, okay, is double, and Henry can confirm this with his numbers, is double the total ticket revenue of all of our Division II sports combined year over year for the last 15 years. And that's not selling an additional ticket. That's the realities of Division I and the revenue that you can find. So it's important to note that I think we have done a pretty good job of finding a way to stabilize ourselves financially. Now it's time for us to get very serious about supporting the programmatic needs and programmatic excellence of our department. The reason I took the job was I wanted to work with coaches and student athletes and create a culture of success and excellence and returning to a college campus. Didn't know that we'd have to spend 2.5 years working on budgets and the like. Now we get to turn our focus on really supporting our students' efforts at Division I, supporting our coaches, and trying to create the sort of excellence that they're going to need long term. We think that programmatic excellence also equals Division I athletics in Omaha. Certainly our statement about Division II was not a priority at Division I or a preference of Division I athletics over Division II. It was merely trying to recognize what the market expectation was in Omaha relative to athletics. And so really what we're doing is we've got five key components when we're looking at programmatic excellence and supporting our students and coaches. First of all, academic success. It's important to us in our transition to Division I that we support our students and our coaches in their efforts at Division I. We're going to demand more of our coaches and students than ever before. Travel time will be more substantial, and it's imperative for us to be able to have the resources for our students to be able to succeed. Obviously, compliance, academic support, and then leadership opportunities within the community are things that are very important to us. So in order to have that programmatic excellence, you're going to have facilities that support that effort. And we're just absolutely thrilled that we're going to be able to support our students and our coaches through a recent gift to the athletic department through the University of Nebraska Foundation. And so about 5,000 square feet of existing fieldhouse space within the SAP Fieldhouse within our complex will be converted into an academic success, quote, center, if you will, that will give us additional space for tutorial support, for student study areas, as well as an expanding staff that has to support our students, including our compliance help. So that's really important to us. Secondly, athletic performance. One of the areas that I'm really passionate about because of my past experience is how can we look at total student optimization? How can we leverage resources we have internally that are happening on our campus as well as our community to support our students' effort at athletic performance? It isn't just about wins and losses. It's about how do you take young people and focus beyond just the wins and losses, but develop them as people, socially, spiritually, academically, and then, of course, athletically. We think athletic performance is one of those areas that we really have sort of an advantage relative to our competition in terms of areas that we can leverage to help build in athletic performance. We envision an area of working. Our campus is building a new biomechanical laboratory that's attached to the HPER building. There are resources available there. How can we leverage some of those resources, even things that are happening within our biology department, to further advance promoting the athletic advancement of our student athletes? We sit down with parents every day, and our parents, when we look at prospective student athletes, want to know, okay, our young daughter, our young son, when he or she goes off to UNO, what's your vision for how you're going to help him or her become the best hockey player, best women's basketball player, best student, best person? And we think we have some resources that are going to allow us to do that. Next is athletic advancement, obviously corporate partnerships, private giving, media platform, all very important. Part of our move to Division I as well is we believe as the front porch of the university, it's our job and our ability to elevate and raise the profile of the academic side of the house. We need to be aligned with peer institutions. I've gotten good feedback from some of our deans and professors on our campus. Just as a reminder, back in the MIAA, in terms of academic ability on campuses, UNO was the outlier in terms of what it had accomplished. Now in the Summit League, UNO is sort of in between. And we think that's a good thing. We think some of the collaboration that can happen with places like UMKC and Oakland University is a good thing, and that's already happening. And so they can hold us accountable, and we can strive for the excellence of some of those metropolitan campuses. That's important. But we can use athletics, and we can use Division I athletics to help elevate the profile of the academic side of the house. In our game against Minnesota Duluth, we've got great feedback from NBC Sports Network. They were surprised, and I won't get into the specifics of the ranking because it's a little bit arbitrary, but they were very pleased with the total viewership of the game. 80 million people had the opportunity to watch UNO play hockey on national television against Minnesota Duluth, and we had two 30-second spots that were created that aired on national television profiling not only Omaha, but University of Nebraska Omaha and some of the great things happening on our campus. We think that's positive. We have a lot of efforts and plans at further advancing through exposure. That's the big piece for us, whether it's statewide or even nationally. Obviously, in our move to the National Collegiate Hockey Conference, that's one of our pieces is how do we align ourselves with other institutions where we can continue to garner exposure. I can't make announcements at this time, but we're very confident and getting close to being able to participate with a national television package and are confident that UNO hockey will be profiled consistently for the next several years on national television as a result of our alignment with like institutions who've also made a significant investment into hockey. Event management is also very important to us. We need to meet the level of excellence in the community in terms of fan experience. Certainly we have made a concerted effort to do that down at the CenturyLink for hockey. We think we've made a lot of progress. We're certainly not where we need to be. We can always get better, but I think generally our fans will tell you that the experience that they have at our hockey game is a good one, and it's comparable to some of the other top hockey schools in the country. We think that moving men's basketball down to the new Ralston Arena is going to be very positive for us in terms of fan experience, student experience. I would tell you that one of the best feelings that I ever get is coming into the third period, like we did against Duluth, when we had about 15,000 or so that were there, and looking at the student section and seeing about 500 to 1,000 students really enjoying the student engagement piece of being a student at UNO. That's what we can do. That's what it's about. Certainly we want to win. Certainly budgets are important. We're trying to drive revenue and all those kinds of things. But at the end of the day, having experience for our student athletes and the general student population is extraordinarily positive. And seeing the beach balls flying was just a great sight for us. And then obviously financial management, risk management is very important to us going forward. We've taken a real proactive approach. It's a different culture than Division II. It's not necessarily easy, but we've been very transparent with our coaches and students. We have tiered our programs. We've narrowed our focus. Hockey remains 92% of the total revenue that we generate in our department. And so certainly when you look at things like marketing and ticketing and where we're putting our human resources, where we're putting our efforts, where are we driving our efforts, we're a hockey school. We certainly won't apologize for that. We're pleased to be a hockey school, and we think that fits well within our overall metropolitan campus, within the overall system, and we think it fits well within the university community or Omaha community as well. So we'll continue at the efforts at programmatic excellence, and we totally understand that the final piece, of course, is facility excellence. And what we've tried to do is to look at our existing assets we have, how do we advance some of those, like the Academic Excellence Center right in the SAP Fieldhouse. What existing assets do we have in Omaha? Our softball team will be moving in a partnership with Westside High School immediately to play at the new Hillside Complex. We think that's important. Our coaches are thrilled. Our students are going to have a better experience, and we think the fan experience will be great as well. Ultimately, of course, as we continue to look at our campus, as we continue to evolve, 15,000 students, 10,000 full-time students, and capacity goals of 20,000 students. There's some real challenging sort of visions that need to take place relative to what facilities need to look like for us. We can't look at what we envision for 2012 or even 2015. In 2030, what will our campus look like? How many students will be living on our campus? What will Omaha look like? Where are populations heading? And what should a dynamic metropolitan public university in Omaha, Nebraska's athletic department look like? Those are all the questions that we're working through. It's fantastic. We've had tremendous amount of feedback, help, community support, and at the end of the day, we're confident that the right conclusions will be made to the appropriate questions. So that's where we are. That's where we're heading, and we're confident that we're heading in the right direction. So I'll stop there and maybe allow for any questions that you might have.
While Gary's collecting a couple of the questions, I had one. Finish the sentence. When Dean Blaze spills the beans about one of our projects we haven't announced publicly, I
really like Dean. Dean, what Dean loves to do is when we talk about goals, we talk about agendas, we talk about possibilities, Dean is very quick to make the jump to the conclusion. So I tell you what, Dean has been a remarkable force within our athletic department. And I'll just tell you, when you stop and think about it, when we hired Dean Blaze, a two-time national champion head coach at Division I, to come to Omaha, Nebraska, where he was the coach, it was the Husker football, right, in North Dakota. He was XYZ head coach at the University of Nebraska with all the attention, all of that. He came to a culture of Division II. And many of you who cover us have seen Dean Blaze in the front row with his wife Jackie at Division II women's basketball games. He has been a great fit. He has zero ego. He has one agenda, and that's to win. And he's won national championships, and that's what he wants to do. At the same time, we're looking for new and creative ways that we can advance our brand. And so, many of those sorts of things that Dean has had a tendency to sort of release, that don't upset me. I'm just thrilled about his passion. And we are working on a number of different things. And certainly we'll be happy to share them publicly when they're finalized. They're just simply not finalized. Dean's mentioned outdoor hockey at TD Ameritrade. Certainly It's an opportunity for us. Those are sort of the community assets we have here that make it unique, that we'd like to take advantage of. That's certainly our goal and aspiration, and we'd like someday for that to come to fruition.
All right, on to audience questions. Would you discuss the possibility of practice ice and or a UNO ice rink arena for the hockey team? And another one, if UNO were to build an arena for hockey, what would be the ideal size?
Those are great questions, and questions that have garnered a lot of interest. What was the first question again? I'm sorry.
Discuss
it too. Okay. Well, in our whole process, you know, I think our objective has always been to try to define, first of all, what are UNO's needs. You know, you can have wants, you can have needs, and you can have desires. At the end of the day, we have to truly understand what our needs are. We have to understand what's possible. We don't want to limit our vision. We also understand that our job, if you stop and think about it, if 92% of the total revenue we generate is hockey, this is our Nebraska football. We've got to do everything we possibly can to protect our ability to make sure that our hockey program is successful long term. And so certainly there's community assets available. We've had a good relationship at the Quest and now at the CenturyLink Center. But I don't have any definitive conclusions on practice ice. You know, I know there was the article in the Omaha World Herald. I think since 2006, about four or five various studies have been done, you know, based on what could or should happen. It was one alternative. I am confident at some point, though, that within the next foreseeable future, that we'll gain some clear a clear path forward in terms of what needs to make sense. And capacity, what makes the most sense? You know, that's a great question. I think it's part of what makes the whole conversation interesting. We are going to a new conference. How will that impact? What's the historical attendance been? How many tickets did we sell when we were at the Civic? How many are we selling at the Quest Center? So there's a lot of things that go into it, and we have a lot of really intelligent people working on it, and I believe that the right thing is going to happen for UNO. We have to make decisions on what's in the best interest of UNO. We've done that consistently, and we intend to continue doing that.
Related to that, despite having some of the best attendance in hockey, there have been years that hockey has lost money. What is the status now, and when is the contract coming up for renewal at the CenturyLink?
That's a good question. We have, I believe, by June, we have to. There's another year after that. So, state your intentions about our future with the CenturyLink and Mecca. You know, we've done a lot of benchmarking, and I don't want to get into right now all of that data. But I will only suggest that it's a pretty substantial difference what our public-private partnership is in terms of rent and what many of our competitions are. We know what those numbers are. You know, so there's a lot of variables to it. Look, it's a world-class facility. They've treated us well. We're fourth in the nation in attendance. We average about 8,300 fans, and the reality is there's 16,000 seats. So you can draw your own conclusions. But, you know, rent is one thing, but there's a lot more to it. You know, lost revenue is also, in essence, an expense. And so you're not looking at rent alone.
Since you were involved in UNO's move for hockey into the WCHA, can you talk a little bit about the likely effect that the new Big Ten Hockey Conference is going to have on the new league that UNO is joining?
Sure. I was very concerned. The rumors about Big Ten hockey had persisted for a number of years, and very shortly into my tenure, I was convinced that the Big Ten, because it made sense, we're going to do whatever they could to have Big Ten hockey. And you could sort of sense at some of the meetings what was happening. Essentially, the larger schools became weary of subsidizing smaller hockey schools. So there were many schools who had small operational budgets, small coaching salaries, and really depended upon the distribution at the end of the season, as well as that one or two home games with the large brands that they made all their money off of. And so we made a conscious decision after looking at the CCHA and the WCHA and its membership. If the Big Ten started Big Ten hockey, we felt like it was an untenable position to be standing in the CCHA. And so we felt moving to the WCHA, and we were fortunate that they were looking for additional members, and we went to the WCHA. Then when the Big Ten hockey became a reality, I think the reality of the rest of us taking a hard look at who we were as institutions and recognizing that some of us naturally migrated together. We were like institutions. We thought the same way. We'd made similar commitments. Of the eight institutions that are forming the NCHC, we're all hockey schools. I mean, with the exception of Miami of Ohio, you know, obviously they're in the MAC and play football, Western Michigan, but the lion's share of us, this is our sport. This is our focal piece. And when that's the case, it's a little bit different. So it was real natural in terms of us coming together.
Related to that, what do you think the future of the WCHA is now?
Actually, I think the WCHA is going to have a great future. They merged with the CCHA. I think it will continue on as a an outstanding conference, and I think what you'll see evolving a little bit. I think there was some real concern about the Big Ten hockey and NCHC, and would programs, you know, fall apart, and it really be detrimental to the overall hockey landscape. And I think the reality is that there will be opportunities now for additional schools to either start or maintain a hockey program based on the level of funding they can do. And the reality is, for us as a Division I institution with a real focus on hockey, we have a larger operational budget and coaching salaries and a commitment to hockey than many schools are prepared to make. So the WCHA will continue on. It has good leadership, great institutions, most of whom are not financially supporting their programs at the same level. So it's, I don't want to call it mid-major because that's not fair, but if you look at multiple other sports, you know, there's different entry points. I mean, what Nebraska spends on football is a lot different than what Northern Illinois spends. So I think there are going to be long-term more opportunities for schools to start hockey, be relevant. And as you guys know in hockey, it doesn't matter. Smaller schools every week beat powerhouses. Wisconsin, look at the rankings in the WCHA today. You know, you would think, well, is Minnesota and Wisconsin, they're at the top. Not necessarily. Michigan Tech, Northern Michigan, those kinds of schools are very, very competitive.
You spoke of the fan experience at hockey. With the recent changes surrounding photography and video by fans, what is your response to those that feel this dilutes their experience, especially when other institutions do not have similar rules in place?
I don't really know. I don't have a good answer on, because I've never been a fan who wasn't able to do, I guess, what you're representing.
There's a recent change where fans are not allowed to take video. There was some controversy about that after Christmas and into the new year.
Yeah, I'm aware of the incident. I didn't get specifically involved with it, but it's a policy that the department, in conjunction with the CenturyLink, has decided is in our best interest, and that's what we've chosen to do.
Why was Maverick Sports moved from KVNO to the Brew?
Good question. One of our issues that we had, and I think if you talk to the leadership at KVNO, again, it was we had different missions. I mean, KVNO has a completely different mission than what we're trying to do in our athletic department. And I think there were a lot of folks who, when they tuned into KVNO, didn't want to hear Maverick hockey. They didn't want to hear. They went to KVNO for very specific reasons. And so, you know, our effort, again, was at really expanding and building our brand and through exposure. And we thought that a partnership with Clear Channel was a good thing for us, some cross-promotional pieces on other Clear Channel outlets. And so far, we've had very good positive feedback. And we're hopeful that that's a relationship that can be sustainable long-term.
This one ties into both branding and hockey. Given what you spent on rebranding, doesn't it make sense to use the new bullhead logo on the hockey uniform, or why not?
Yeah, we had a lot of feedback on that too. One of the things that we tried to do, because we recognized that when you rebrand, it costs thousands of dollars. And so in essence, we tried to explain to people that this is going to be a soft launch. We were not in a financial position to say, okay, here's our new brand. You will not see any of the old O's or any of the old Bulls anywhere. One of the other things that we tried to do was to be sensitive to those who had certain preferences and not be heavy-handed and walk in and say, you're doing this. And so we very patiently worked with folks. And I think what we've seen is, you know, it takes some time for folks who may have been more comfortable with the old brand. And so rather than going in and sort of forcing it down others' throats, we decided to allow individual programs to have a little bit of say in terms of what they wanted their uniforms to look like. We have a group currently working that's creating sort of a what we'd really like to do is have some basic standards in terms of colors. One of the things we're trying to do, too, is to be more prominently black in a lot of our colors. I mean, we've got, you know, Creighton's light blue, Lincoln's red, and Kearney's blue, and we think it'd be great. Obviously, black and red and white are part of our colors, but it sort of, you know, gives us a uniqueness to our brand. So we want to have some overall parameters, some overall sort of guidelines, but we also think it's important for our coaches to be able to sit down and create some of their own unique feel. Primary logo's the O, secondary logo's the Bull, and if Coach Blaze, our coaches and the equipment staff want to have the Bull on the front, great. And I think it's important to listen to the fans. The reality is that the group got together and decided that that's what they wanted to do. But ultimately, long term, we need to get to a position where there's uniformity in look, feel for all of our sports, but yet some uniqueness individually within the coaching desires.
You mentioned the cost in rebranding and the cost of facilities. Why does it seem so difficult for UNO to raise money when UNL seems to have no difficulties with their capital campaigns?
I don't know that I'm the right person to answer that question. Henry, do you have time to address that? I would tell you this. I don't think it's hard for UNO to raise money in its athletic department. We've had great success, not on a huge level, without a communicating, without even being able to communicate an overall vision for facilities. That's our biggest challenge. I believe people will support us. I believe people, we have not actively engaged in that overall campaign, in large part because we want a clearly defined overall vision that takes consensus. And that's not necessarily easy. Remembering now that we've had athletics for over 100 years, and I certainly do not in any way mean to, speak down to past efforts at fundraising because they've been substantial. But you're talking about 15, 20 years ago, essentially UNO and its athletic department was more intramural, you know, or club, and then solid Division II, now to Division I. We've not done substantial facility investments at UNO, you know, with the exception of the addition to the SAP Fieldhouse. Meanwhile, our campus grew so much that it sort of started cannibalizing. I saw old pictures of where baseball used to play, and you know, so this is a pretty substantial effort. Takes a lot of time, a lot of thought, and we get one chance at this. So I think it's really important for us to be thoughtful, to understand who we are, what are our goals and aspirations. We continue to be sincere about our effort to be highly integrated into the UNO on the academic side. I mean, we are not we're not Florida State, Texas, Tennessee. We're not trying to be that. That's not our mission. We'll never be that. What we want to be is a dynamic, relevant athletic department that contributes to the overall mission of the institution, period. You can't do that if you're fiscally irresponsible. You can't do that if you have programs in the community that don't meet the market's expectations, and you can't do that if you don't have facilities that the market expects to participate in. And so that's our effort.
On the subject of finances, with the transition from individual booster clubs to the One Fund, what has been the result in terms of fundraising?
That's great. Good question. It's been outstanding. I think, initially, There's some concern about, well, how does this affect this program? Will the money that we're giving to support this individual program actually go to that program? The move to the one fund was less about control, in essence, internally, and more about control for protection from an audit and NCAA perspective. I mean, we simply were not in a position, and very early on, when we made the announcement that we hired Dean Blaze, we essentially said, we're going to get serious about standing on rooftops and proclaiming UNO and UNO athletics, and we're going to compete. You know, nobody's too concerned about you if you're always in last place and sitting in the corner, right? But the minute you start having success, which we have had and will continue to have, you open yourself up. And we're going to do everything we can to do what's right, by the book, and still have the opportunity for people to be a part of those booster clubs. And so I think some initial discomfort with change, was problematic. But I think eventually as people began to see, and it really comes down to the coaches, when the coaches are able to communicate to the fans that, yes, we're being supported through, when you check baseball, it's actually going to support our baseball program. That's important. So we had to, again, gain consensus with our coaches and help them understand that this is not an effort at not allowing people to support us. This is an effort at protecting ourselves, making sure we're compliant. Essentially, here's what happened a few years ago. When I looked to me like, and I won't say what sport it was, but one of our sports basically took our ticket revenue. They offered tickets through the booster club. So they took our ticket revenue, held it, and then told us how to spend the money. 80% of one of our sports tickets were comps. So what they would do is they would take tickets, have people join the booster club, give them significant discounts. So why you would ever buy a ticket to an event when you could join this club and get 50% off the price of the ticket? And then somebody outside the university had control over the checkbook, would then instruct the athletic department on how to spend the money. Can't work that way. First of all, you can't do that with the NCAA. You can't, you can't do that for audit purposes. So is the one fund perfect? Absolutely not. Do we need to continue working and evolving it? Absolutely. But it was really about an effort at protecting ourselves from not doing the wrong sort of things. And fortunately at UNO, I want to make this very clear too. We've never had any booster. Nobody has knowingly, maliciously done anything to put the athletic department at risk. Nobody's ever done that. We have had occasions where we were at risk, but it was simply, you know, miscommunication or someone didn't know that you couldn't do that. But it was never a quote, rogue booster who's out creating all these problems.
Other than Bridget.
Other than me. Speaking of the NCAA, what is the NCAA ruling on beer sales at various athletic events, and does UNO get any of the revenues from beer sales related to Maverick hockey?
Another great question. The NCAA itself doesn't mandate, to the best of my knowledge, individual institutions beer sales during competitions. The only thing it does mandate is it does not allow beer sales at NCAA sanctioned events. For instance, at TD Ameritrade, when the College World Series, I believe they have beer, I've not been there, but I believe they have beer sales in the suites, but they do not have beer sales during the game, correct? So at CenturyLink, if there's a NCAA basketball game, Creighton serves beer, but once the NCAA is hosting the event, there won't be beer sold in the CenturyLink, but I think it's still in the suites. But to answer your question, no, UNO has never materially profited from directly from beer sales or concession sales or parking or most corporate as well.
But you're going to fix all that, right? How are you getting the general Omaha community to get behind UNO sports? It seems like everybody I talk to only talks about Cornhusker football.
It's a great question, and it was one of the first pieces that Bruce Rasmussen told me in my first month on the job. He said it's a long shadow from Lincoln. How do you get people involved? I think what we're trying to do, of course, is in much of what we've done in our athletic department is we took a more global look at our system. We looked at our state, and we said we are part of the University of Nebraska system. We're not trying to be, you know, separate. How can we create our own niches? How can we create, you know, something unique? And that's, you know, why we've really focused on hockey. Creighton doesn't play hockey, neither does Lincoln.
And so it doesn't mean that we don't care about the rest of our sports, but let's be honest. If Nebraska football is doing really well, your perception is that everything's going well down in the athletic department in Lincoln, right? They could have lost. They could be in last place in every other sport. But if Husker football, you know, conversely, if they're winning the championship in every sport, but, you know, winning two games in football. So I think the point is narrowing our focus has been the key. We have 40,000, according to our alumni association. According to our alumni association, there's 92,000 living UNO alums in America. 72,000 live in the state of Nebraska, and 40,000 live in Metro Omaha. And so we are confident that it's on us. We have to achieve a certain level of excellence that they're willing to put on that shirt right there and say, that's right. I'm a UNO graduate. I'm proud of it. And I'm going to go support our student athletes in their efforts at excellence. We think that hockey is a very good indicator that if you compete at high levels and do well, people will support you. When 15,000 fans are chanting UNO at CenturyLink, it kind of gives you goosebumps. It's really neat. And so we feel like that's not on UNO graduates, that's on us. We have to raise our game. We have to have facilities they want to participate in. We have to have a brand that they feel proud about wearing. And that's our job. It's not their job. And so we're going to work every day to have that kind of product that people are really proud of the fact that they're Mavericks. And we think that people ultimately, hopefully, will do that.
Now we get into some tough questions. Not that the rest of them haven't been tough. Why was dropping football a necessity in moving up to Division I?
Good question. So in our move to Division I, the consensus was, and remember, when we started our whole process, we went into our strategic planning saying, okay, we're not going to manage the outcome. Is everybody prepared for where the numbers direct us? If the numbers direct us to dropping athletics at UNO, will we do it? And I remember telling my wife, I go, geez, honey, I might be eliminating my job. The point was, we looked at no athletic department, Division III, staying at Division II, and moving to Division I. And when the reality came that in order to find more revenue, we were going to have to go to Division I, then the other reality set in that we weren't going to be able to expand our budget. We were going to have to live within the confines of our existing spend. And so Division II football, as we did much research, has been chronicled by Henry in the paper. The reality was, let's just say in general, roughly, we were going to have to double, you know, the operational budgets of football. We couldn't afford Division II football, 36 full scholarship equivalencies. So moving to Division I would have been 63 full scholarship equivalencies. And so the point was there was no way financially we were going to be able to take football to Division I. And a lot of people have mentioned playing game guarantees in football. We did a lot of those studies, and generally what we found is that, you know, it was a good thought. They went into the process saying, well, we'll play two games. We'll play Nebraska and Iowa. After that year, they got beat up so bad that they won two games in their conference, and the coach goes to the AD and says, if you keep making me do it, we'll never win. So then the next year, it's Iowa and New Mexico. And by year, you know, what, that whole business model. The other piece was you want to build your model based on what you know. And as conferences continue to expand, as you read about the Big Ten with an alliance with the Pac-12, why are they playing more conference games? Because they're really getting tired of schools holding them hostage, saying, unless you pay me $900,000, I'm not coming. And fans don't want to pay $75 for a ticket to watch, you know, a bloodbath. So the point is, we felt that long-term there were decreasing opportunities for game guarantees in football, and it wasn't a business model that was going to be sustainable. So purely financial in football.
Related to that, has the furor over dropping football and wrestling gone away completely, or how much has that declined, in your opinion?
Well, you know, I don't know that the emotion from those two entities will ever subside, and I wouldn't expect it to. You know, I've often tried to put myself in those positions, and I wouldn't have been pleased. You know, I've had conversations with multiple people, and you know, they continue to be very frustrated. Those two individual sports, I think a little bit less. I think wrestling, you know, moving on and being at Maryville University has been, you know, been good for them. But to your point, I mean, I don't hear much anymore, and it's certainly not like it was a few months ago. But
that doesn't mean they're less angry.
Time heals some wounds, apparently. Speaking of the elimination of football and wrestling, what do you wish you knew then that you know now, and what would you have done differently?
Wow. Great question. I learned a lot. A lot of it I learned was very positive. You know, we were so focused. I personally was so focused on finding a solution. The chancellor said, you have one job, and you better bring a recommendation to me how we can stabilize this thing financially. You know, I think the one thing that is really not positive is I think so much of the NCAA's new rules about moving to Division I are positive. I think forcing schools, for instance, UC Davis has went to Division I. They still don't have a conference. Our Associate Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs is leaving to go take over a position there. And we had a conversation, and they are just roaming about. They can't get into a conference. Nobody will take them. So here they are. It's a terrible thing for your student athletes. They're flying all over the country. They just can't get into a conference. So the NCAA tried to fix that by saying, you can't go to Division I unless you have a conference, you know, invite. Well, what it's done is it's put administrators in very difficult spots, because even if you'd – so in the past, what you would do is you'd get the whole community together, all of your coaches and all of that, and you'd say, we're going to go to Division I, and everybody's on the same page and they're fired up. You really can't do that today, because if you do that today and you make that announcement, you're going to look pretty foolish when you don't have a conference invitation. So the fact that the rules to get into Division I have changed, I think, make it very, very difficult. So what I wish I could change was you wish that, you know, you didn't have to wait till March 6th to get the official invitation. You know, I think ultimately you have nothing until you have a signed document from the league. So that's been difficult. I certainly wish I would have been able to speak directly with Coach Denny in person. The difference with Twitter and Facebook and the advent of all the social media sites puts you in a very difficult spot today. It's very, very difficult to maintain any confidentiality on information. Knew that the moment the conversation was with Coach Burns, of course, it was going to spread. And I wanted Coach to hear it from me in the best way possible. So I suppose we could have done a better job of just generally communicating. Again, I think you get so focused in on numbers and so focused in on process that sometimes some of the other pieces fail you. Remembering that we're the first and remain the only institution that we can find that has transitioned to Division I and reorganized at the same time. So there really wasn't a template for us to look at. Certainly our chancellor's never done this. And I promise you, I've never done this. And I also promise you, I hope, I can tell you, I don't think I'll ever do that again.
How have the new residence facilities for students on campus affected the excitement for your sports programs?
Absolutely altered in a hugely positive way the student experience on our campus. And I think you see a real difference between, because I hear from them, students who went to UNO and lived on campus are much more emotionally invested into UNO. You know? They lived it. They were there. And so what's exciting is that group continues to grow. I think the chancellor mentioned that, you know, his goal is about 18% of total capacity lives on campus. So, you know, we'll never be a campus that has 8,000-9,000 people living on campus. But generally, metropolitan campuses have roughly 18% living on campus. So, you know, you start adding those numbers up. Those are the kinds of students that we find that are really having a great time at hockey. They're really invested into the local, and it isn't just athletics, But they're engaged on campus. And what the chancellor often mentions is that parents speak to him about, what are you doing to engage my child on your campus? Because they feel more comfortable then. So that's what I think the HPER building was all about. What are the student engagement opportunities? And it isn't just athletics, obviously. There's broad student engagement opportunities, whether it's the Greek system and all those kinds of things that are evolving and student government changing and growing as UNO grows. But ultimately, I think that's one of the university's real focuses. How do we provide additional student engagement opportunities? And we think one of the best ways to do it is through athletics. And they will support us. They will come as long as it's a product that they're interested in supporting. I went to student government and spoke to them. And I, very honestly asked them, what do we need to do? This is very early. And they were not shy when they told me that it felt like going to less than high school games. So we had our work cut out for us. You go around to a lot of local high schools, it's pretty impressive what these students have had a chance to be a part of. So our job is to meet their level of excellence. Simple.
Has being athletic director been what you had expected it to be?
No. Did you want more than that, Bridget? Okay. I will tell you that I was pretty naive when I took the job. I love the job. I absolutely love it. My wife and I love Omaha. We love the University of Nebraska, Omaha. We have a remarkable staff. I love our coaches and our students. I would tell you that, I really had no idea. And I kid the chancellor a lot, and I said, you really didn't tell me all this. But we've grown. I feel like I've personally grown. I've learned a lot, made plenty of mistakes. We've done some good things. But it's just such an honor to get to be a part of people who have stuck with UNO for so long in spite of so many obstacles because they believe in the place. And it's just so energizing. And quite frankly, one of the great things about athletics, whether you're playing football or any other sport, if you really think about it, because I've thought about it, the very basic thing about things like football is you learn to have to get up. I mean, in a football game, you get knocked down a lot. And so you sort of, you learn to give it up, you get up. Failure is just not an option. So you figure it out. And that's what's been the most encouraging to me is when we've had very difficult times, it doesn't matter who it is. There hasn't been one person in this community, anybody who has not agreed to meet with me and help me. And that's what makes this community so remarkable. And that's why I'm so confident that that we're going to see this thing through and we're going to be able to do what we hope and accomplish to do, because I believe that that Omaha wants to have a vibrant, dynamic, forward-thinking university and athletic department. But we're going to have to work, and we like to work, so that's good.
You've earned a reputation, and based on what you've said today, it's deserved, as a visionary. Where do you see UNO athletics in 5 years? And again, we're not going to hold you to any specific announcements, but can you give us your idea of what that would look like 5 years from now?
Well, I think that in 5 years, our hockey program will be pretty established nationally as one of the premier college hockey programs. If we're not there, then it's going to be very, very disappointing. And I'm not suggesting conference and national championships. I'm talking about nationally today, if you get out in hockey circles, UNO is and it's really not called UNO. It's called Omaha Hockey. But they refer to us as Omaha Hockey, and everybody knows about Omaha Hockey. I got so many text messages when we were on national television, even though we were losing. People just amazed at the kind of support Omaha was giving Omaha Hockey and how exciting it was. So I'd like to think that continued growth in our hockey program. I think an investment on our campus, on athletic facilities, will happen by then. I think our students deserve it. And I think that more students living on our campus will be actively participating in athletic events at UNO. And I'd like to think that our men's basketball program It'll take all of those five years to gain any traction. I mean, it's going to be. I mean, I absolutely know this. It's going to take a long time for men's basketball because you've got to understand what we're asking them to do. In our efforts to stabilize the department, back to the teamwork piece, we're asking men's basketball to do what's not best for them, to go out for the department and raise $300,000 each year through game guarantees. You ever notice why a lot of the other schools, they're staying at home. They pay all these schools $80,000. So at the end of the day, you know, they're trying to get to a certain amount of wins to make. So for right now, men's basketball, I've been very clear to our coaches, you know, this is what we need you to do for the team. And as we stabilize and we move from there, game guarantees will always be a part of what we do. It just will. That's our model. But then we've got to help our coaches start moving away. If you do that game guarantee, can we give them a little of that game guarantee money to bring in a school that we have a good shot of beating? Maybe. So I think in 5 years, you're just hopefully going to, because that's when we'll be fully Division I, really able to be competitive consistently in men's basketball. I think women's basketball is a great opportunity for us. I think we have a great opportunity, and I think volleyball is just sitting there. There's a great volleyball opportunity for us as well. And at the end, Bridget, I'll just add final this. My sincere goal within 5 years is our campus community. I believe we will have earned their trust and credibility as a valued department on campus. That's my goal. We got to create internal value first. You know, that's what scared me to death. We had zero internal value on our own campus. We don't have to worry about building a brand across Nebraska unless we get this fixed right now. So we're going to make tough decisions. We're going to do the right thing. We're going to collaborate with the academic side. We're going to explain to them that we get it. We know what we're doing. We're here to work with you, not against you. Use athletics the right way. Our faculty athletics rep, Bill Wakefield, Dr. Wakefield, is in our executive staff meeting every Monday morning. So we're not going to just, you know, talk about these things. We're going to be serious about them.
That was a long answer.
That was a great answer. Our thanks to Trev Alberts for being here for our noon forum today. Also, thanks to KIOS Public Radio for broadcasting our noon forum. We are adjourned.
You've been listening to a luncheon broadcast from the Omaha Press Club on Noon Forum. We've heard a talk by Trev Alberts, the athletic director at the University of Nebraska at Omaha. Mr. Alberts, substituting for UNO hockey coach Dean Blaze, who was unable to appear due to a conflict, spoke on the topic UNO Hockey and the World Junior Championships. This program was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Thursday afternoon, January 26, 2012, for broadcast at this time. Special thanks to the Omaha Press Club's Education Committee for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. The Omaha Press Club presents these noontime educational forums each month. The next program will be Thursday, February 16th at 12 noon. At that time, the guest speaker will be Terry Kroger, the current publisher of the Omaha World Herald. He will talk about the recent acquisition of the paper by Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. If you'd like to attend this or other future programs in the series, call the Omaha Press Club at 402-345-8008. These events are open to both members and non-members of the Omaha Press Club. The Omaha Press Club is located on the 22nd floor of the First National Center, 16th and Dodge, in downtown Omaha. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.